morning. We're going to go back now to the sugya of minhag. Because of the importance of the sugya, and because of the fact that this issue really touches every shiloh that we have in Chayish Mishpat, at some point goes back to where and when minhag plays a role. The shiur is going to be a little bit more technical, but hopefully everyone will bear with me for a few moments. As we discussed, minhag mevatel halacha. The Yerushalmi says that if there's a local norm, if there's a local practice, even if it seems to contradict halacha, when we're dealing with matters of chayish and mishpat, which ultimately can be negotiated between the parties, minhag will override, and we will follow the minhag, even if it seems to be against Shulchan Aruch. Now, there's one case which seems to be a little bit of an exception, and this is a very common issue. What happens if you hire a worker? You call a plumber, he comes down, and you don't discuss the price in advance. He finishes the job, he hands you a bill, and then you decide to start handling. What and why? Why is it so expensive? What's the halacha? So over here the halacha is, and based on aktsayis, it depends what you told him. If when you hire a worker, you tell him, I'm going to pay you the typical wages, I'm going to pay you like someone else in the city, then you have to pay the typical wages. We figure out what the shiur beinoni, what the average is, either it's an average between the high and the low, or it's the most common wage, bit of machlokes how to determine it. But if you say, I'm going to pay you typical wages, you pay him typical wages. If the parties are silent, you hire him, you don't say anything about compensation, the halacha is you do not pay the regular price. You pay pachos shebapoilim. You pay the lowest price that people will do the work for. And the reason for this is that people always want cheap labor. Everyone wants a bargain. The workers know it. The employers know it. And therefore, when he accepts a job, expects to get anything more than the minimum wage in this industry, he has to negotiate. He has to say something. And if he doesn't say anything, the halacha is you pay pachos shebapoilim. So that means, which seems to come out, if you go to a doctor, you have the procedure done, he sends you a bill, it would seem, al pi halacha, you can tell him, listen, you didn't discuss how much it's going to cost beforehand, I only have to pay you a pachos shebapoilim. Now in this case, you know, an argument could be made, I don't know of any makar in halacha, but there is an argument that could be made, that when you go to a doctor, everyone knows the doctor has a set rate for all of the procedures that he does. There's a set fee. And the norm is, if you have a problem with it, if you want to go negotiate, you do it beforehand. If you don't say anything, you're accepting whatever that set fee is. Now, that svara is probably true. And even though technically in halacha you get pachos shebapoilim in such situations where there's a clear minhag that you're accepting his fee, that would probably hold true. But there is a risk. If the doctor or if the attorney that you hire has a range of rates, he doesn't charge everyone the same price, then al pi halacha, if you don't discuss it in advance, the client can say, I'm paying you your minimal rate. If you wanted more, you should have said something. And therefore, it's extremely important, especially when dealing with compensation, that the parties should discuss everything very openly and very clearly in advance. Because otherwise, afterwards, you can get into tremendous machlokes. Now, another area of where minhag plays a role is severance pay. Perhaps a person works for a company for many years, the company has to downsize, and they fire him. Is a person entitled to a severance package? So, pi halacha, if you go through Chayish Mishpat, there's no makar to be mechayiv of someone's severance. There is a chinuch that says there's a mitzvah by an Eved Ivri when he leaves after he's served you for 6 years or until Yovel, whatever the story is. There's a mitzvah of Hanukkah. The mitzvah is don't send him out empty-handed. Send him, give him a matana, give him a Hanukkah. Send him out with a certain amount of food, a certain amount of money. Zog the chinuch. Today, we don't have any avadim. Nevertheless, we learn from the mitzvah of Hanukkah that the right thing to do is, if you have a worker that served you well, don't send him out empty-handed. And therefore, while it's not a chiyuv al pi din, it is a midas chasidus, it's the right thing to do to give some sort of severance package. Now, this is a midas chasidus. It's certainly not enforceable. However, in Eretz Yisrael, in many places, there is a minhug to give Chodesh Lashana. A Rebbe or people who work for Maestas, there's a very widespread custom that when they retire, they get 1 month's pay for every year they are there. They're there for 20 years, they get 20 months' salary. So the Minchas Yitzchak Paskins, if there is such a minhug, if you hire someone, even though you didn't speak out anything, hakolafi haminhug, and you're going to have to pay the severance. Now, interestingly, the tshuva was written, I think, to Switzerland. It was not the person who was asking the question was not from Eretz Yisrael. So the Minchas Yitzchak says, I don't know the minhug there. In Eretz Yisrael, there's a minhug to pay Chodesh Lashana. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, I don't know. But if this is the custom, if this is the practice, even though there was no discussion, even if he was very well paid, the halacha is he has the right to insist on the minhug, and he's entitled to the severance pay. Now, this halacha is pretty clear. When you hire someone, if you don't speak out how much you're going to pay him, you pay him pachas shebach pa'il. What can get very interesting is which market do we look at? An American family went to Yerushalayim for Sukkos. While they were there, they were staying in the plaza, a Belgium shadchan approached them and read them a shidduch through to a South African family. Baruch Hashem, the shidduch went through. Shidduch went through. The shadchan wants to get paid. How much shadchanus is he entitled to? Now, in this case, they didn't negotiate anything in advance. They didn't negotiate anything in advance. What's the halacha? You pay. Kepacha shebapoilim. Whatever the minimal amount that a shadchan is entitled to. The problem over here is that there are four different continents that we're dealing with. There's a minhag of how much in New York, how much shadchan gets paid. There's a different standard how much they pay in South Africa, Belgium, and Yerushalayim. So whose minhag do we follow? Now this case is a bit extreme, but if you think about it, every time there's a shidduch between an American and an Israeli family, so the shadchan was dealing with both ends, two different places, two different minhagim. How do we determine who pays what shadchanos? And just to give another example of Morchai and Mishpa, this is a story that happened in Lakewood. It seems that in Lakewood, there's a lot of competition among the accountants, and it is very inexpensive to get a personal tax return done. A fellow had an old chavrusa who had long since gone to work, yet now he was a successful accountant in a large New York City firm. So he bumped into him and said, listen, I need someone to do my taxes. You want to do my taxes for me on the side? He said, no problem. Finished the tax returns, handed him the return, and a nice Festa bill. The fellow looks at it and says, what? This is not how much you pay for a return. And Lakewood, the minhag is you pay whatever it is, $100 for the return. The accountant said, $100 for the return? I'm not a Lakewood accountant. I'm a New York City accountant. I work for a large firm in the city. My standards are based on New York standards. What is the halacha? So the Yerushalmi discusses a very similar case. He's discussing a case of Ma'oin and Tveria. Tveria, apparently, people didn't work too hard. They 9 to 5, that was it. Ma'oin, they were paid the same amount. They worked from sunrise to sunset. Zakhdu Yerushalmi, if a worker from Ma'oin, this is the city where they worked hard, traveled to Tveria and he got a job, the halacha is, he only has to work like Tveria's hours. Because that's where he was hired. So, for example, if you are in charge of personnel for an IT department in the city, and you hire a gentleman who's from India, the halacha is you have to pay him New York City prices because you hired him in New York City, and therefore you pay him New York City. But it doesn't matter where he's from. Excuse me. He was doing it also in New York City. We'll get to the different possibilities later. What? It wouldn't make a difference for this halacha. No. Now, Yerushalmi then says the flip side as well. Let's say you go to Tveria, or if you go to Ma'on, and you hire a worker from Tveria there. The halacha is, since you hired him in Ma'on, in the place where they work harder, he's got to work harder. So if you jet down to India to set up a call center, and your first hire happens to be a fellow you know who was originally from the States, but if you're hiring him in India, and he's working in India, you pay him the Indian fees. So I think that's pretty straightforward. And what this means is, if you have a shadchan in America, it doesn't matter if the shadchan is Israeli, is American, is Belgium, if they're working here and they're hired here, you pay them based on the local standards. Okay, if you want to create minhagim, back then outsourcing wasn't so common. A minhag has to be something that happens ma'isim b'chol yoyim. So there was no minhag then, had to deal with someone from Ma'oyin who came to Tveria. If there is a new minhag, you'll follow the minhag. So now let's move it up to the next case. It's a little bit more involved. What happens if you are opening a call center? You need workers. So what you do is, and this was, you know, back then, how did you do outsourcing before they had telephones? So what they did is, someone jetted down to Ma'oin, he went down to India, and he imported workers to America. So he hired them in India to come back and do the work in New York. What do they get paid? So Zuck the Panim, the Yerushalmi based on the Panim Iris, you pay them Indian salaries. Even though the work is happening in the United States, since you hired them in India, you pay them the Indian wages. Yerushalmi explains, because you can tell the workers, listen, if I wanted to pay New York salaries, I didn't need to jet down to India to find you. I could have hired someone in New York. So it's obvious, if I'm coming to your place to hire workers, it's because I want cheap labor. And therefore, what?
Also, they apply to the daily commute. And if someone's coming to travel to New York, the concept of paying Indian wages doesn't make sense.
Okay, fine, fair enough. Fair enough. So therefore, Zuck the Panim Meirais, if you import someone from, you know, if you import someone slave labor from India, as long as you hire them there, then you pay based on those rates. Zuck the Panim Meirais, there's a very big if. Why do you pay the Indian rates? Because you tell the person, if I was looking to pay New York rates, I didn't need to come to India to hire you. What happens if you're not looking for an IT professional, you're looking for a hacker? And you fly down to China to find the world's best hackers. Now, in that case, we have a question. Even though you may fly him into the United States to do the work, there, you don't have this argument. It's not clear that I'm coming to you because it's cheap labor. I'm coming to you because I need you. You are an expert. And I can't find this level of service in New York. So therefore, Zuck the Panim Iris, when you're dealing with a specialty, and the Panim Iris says this applies to a shadchan, if you hire a shadchan and you bring him in from a place where they pay less, there you have to pay the full rate based on where he does the work. Because this is something which is unique. You need a shadchan who has the connections, who's able to push this thing through. Therefore, we don't have this rationale when we say, since you're doing the work here, you have to get paid based on this salary. The Minchas Elazar takes issue with this, but this is the psak of the Panim Iris. Now, in the reverse case, say, what happens if someone from India wants to set up a shop? So he flies down to New York and hires an executive to run his Indian company. So here, it's not discussed specifically, but Igros Moshe says you'll pay him based on where you actually hired him. Even though what you're doing doesn't really make sense, why are you overpaying? But since the bottom line is you hired him in the place where the salaries are higher, that is what you'll have to pay. Now, based on that, let's try to plug it into some of our common scenarios. In our first case, where you had a family from New York, a shadchan from Europe, the Kala, the other family was from South Africa, but the shidduch took place in Yerushalayim. In that case, you hire them in Yerushalayim. The shadchan did the work in Yerushalayim, and therefore, l'kuli alma, you would get paid based on the Yerushalmi rates. On the other hand, if you had an Israeli mishpacha that calls a shadchan in America and asks them to read a shidduch, so since you're hiring someone in America to do the work, you would have to pay the higher rates. In the reverse case, if you had an American, let's assume both families were in America, but for some reason they called an Israeli shadchan to come in to get involved. So there, The Panim Yiroi says, since it's a specialty, you would have to pay based on where they did the work, the American rates, not the Israeli rates, and that the Minchas Lozer would argue on it. If they're in Eretz Yisrael, you hire them in Eretz Yisrael, they did the work in Eretz Yisrael, the Minhag HaMakom should go by where they were at that point. Mechayr? Excellent. You know, so what happens if, we're all discussing a case where there's a point of hire. I go to India and I hire someone so that I'm locked into the Indian wages because that's where I did the hiring. What happens when I don't hire anyone? A shaylchan on his own initiative comes and does the work. So here the halacha would be different. Here we would look at where the work was done. And what will come out is a fascinating halacha. You have a shidduch between an American and an Israeli. So the Israeli, where was the work done for the Israeli? It was done, the work that you do, a shaylchan works for you by talking to the other side. That means the mishpach in Eretz Yisrael, they had the shaykhin work for them by writing the shidduch to the mechutzin in America. So the mishpacha in Eretz Yisrael pays the higher American rates. My she'en kein, the mishpacha in America, where did you work for them? You worked for them in Eretz Yisrael. So the American pays the cheaper Israeli rate, and the family in Eretz Yisrael pays the more expensive American rate, because each one did the work in the wrong place. Excellent. So that's, then now the question is, where did the shaykhin do the work? He's on the phone. There's the family, the Chassin's in America, the Kala's in Eretz Yisrael. The Shadchin is in Belgium. And then he's working the phones. So the Igros Moshe of Paskins, that if you want to know where the work was done, it was done where the Shadchin was standing. Because that's where he was working. Now, based on that, we have a wonderful Eitzah. If you're a Shadchin, and you're reading a Shidduch between two Mishpachas in Eretz Yisrael, before you read the Shidduch, hop on a jet, go to Belgium and make the phone call from there. You're now working for them in Belgium. Now, if you realize that based on this halacha, we can now take care of all the whole outsourcing problem. Because now, if you have a business, instead of setting up a call center in India to save a few dollars, comes a fakir. If you have a business in India and you set up a call center in Manhattan, you can now charge the Manhattan rates. That's where you're doing the work. So this leads us to a problem. Erech Shai points out, then how could it be? You have two Eretz Yisrael mishpachas, they live next door to each other. The Shadchan, when he reads the Shidduch, happens to be in the airport, so now you're going to say it's based on different rates? It doesn't make sense. So the Erech Shai brings up a very important point with Minhag. And that is, we've been saying time and time again, the Minhag Mevatel Halacha, whenever you do a deal, it's based on the Minhag. What happens if the party entering the deal never heard of this Minhag? Never heard of it. The Rivash has a case, a person moved to town, and after he settled in the town, they told him, by the way, this city apparently had huge debts, the government had huge debts, apparently there's nothing new. And the rule in this city was, the takana was, that anyone who moves into the city assumes a share of all of the old debts. The fellow, unsuspecting fellow, moved in, he didn't know anything about it. And then they tell him, by the way, you now owe $3 billion or whatever the number is worked out for each citizen. He said, what are you talking about? I never agreed to such a thing. And he said, no, this is Zakana, this is our Minhag. So over here with the Rivash Paskins, and there's a Shach and Simon Membez as well, Minhag only works because we assume that when you do business, you've accepted all of the local norms. That's only something that you knew about. If you never heard of it, we can't bind you to a minhag that you didn't know and didn't understand and never accepted. And therefore, in the Rivash's case, he says, as soon as you find out about this rule, you have every right to pick yourself up and leave. And if you do that, we can't hold you responsible for the old debts. If you decide to stay, you're accepting the minhag. But we have to give you an opportunity to leave. The fact that you moved in is not mechayev you since you didn't know about this minhag. Zok the Erech Shai, in such a case, with a shadchan, where the parties had no idea that the person was calling from the airport, or even in a case where they did know, but they didn't realize that the rates were different from the place where the shaykhin was based from, there the Erech Shai says you cannot be mechayev of them the extra amount.
Did he be arguing with the question?
Excuse me?
He would be arguing with the question, or the question
No, the Erech Shai is coming to argue on the pun of Miros. The question is just, you know, how far to take it, in which cases, you know, the Erech Shai is quoting a Shach. You know, the question is when you will apply the Shach and when you won't. Because really this Shach, or if you go with this all the way, then how do you ever enforce a Minhag? You can always claim ignorance. So the Chochmah Shloima over there in Siman Mem Beis says, a claim of ignorance is not believed. We assume people that are doing business in a town know the local norms and know the local customs. It's only when there's the guy moved to a new city, and it's this crazy rule which is really against halacha, but a takana is a takana. So in such a case, a foreigner that wasn't aware of this strange rule can say, I didn't know, and he can leave. Masha'enkein, if you're doing business in a local city, you're local, you've lived there all your life. Or if it's something which is not unusual, it's, you know, every place has its customs, you know, every place has its minimum wage. So the fact that you didn't ask what the minimum wage in this town is, you understood there was a minimum wage if you didn't ask. Such cases are less clear that this shock would apply, and that's why it's hard to make it into a machlokes in that sense. So going back, although we follow the minhag, the shach says you have to know about the minhag. And even if we go with the Chacham Shloima, we really have to look at the case. Should a person have realized there was a minhag, in which case he's going to be bound to it, even if he claims later I didn't know. But in cases where it's a strange or unusual minhag, where it's keneged hadin, in such cases he would be able to argue afterwards, I never accepted it, I never agreed to it, and therefore he won't be locked into it. Now, another important shiloh that comes up in a minhagim is, how do you create a minhag? Your employees come to you and say, listen, everyone else is having Chanukah parties. That's a minhag. We want a Chanukah party too. Are they right? Is there such a taina? Now, if everyone is taka having Chanukah parties, it's what every person does it. So, in that case, it's a minhag. And if that's what's understood, that every employer makes a party, gives a present around the holiday season. So if that's the minhag, if everyone does it, clearly that would be binding. What happens, and which is the more common case, most people do it, but not everybody. At what point am I locked in, and do I have to do something just because some other people do it? Now this issue is not so clear in halacha. Because in general, we have a rule of ein hokem b'mamon achar arov. We don't follow the majority rule by mamonus. I mean, in a bez din, there's a halacha that two out of you follow the roiv of the votes of the dayanim. But normally, just because most people do something doesn't mean I have to do it also. I can say I'm from the mir. However, the halacha, the Ramban Shin Lamed Aleph Paskins, that if you have a city, the Gemara is discussing what the definition of a work day is. And the Gemara and so there are more paskins that if you have a new city, so then what do? You follow the Torah's definition and you work from sunrise to sunset. What happens if most of the people of the city are immigrants and they come from another city? There the halacha is the minhagim follow the city where the place where the majority of the people came from. So even though normally we don't go basarov, if the majority of the people are from a specific place, that defines the city as minhagim. Now, the way the Mabusha Yantiv explains it is that even though normally we don't go by the majority, if you live in a country where 70% of the country are WASPs, so you know this country is a WASPy country. This, when business is done, when you negotiate, when you sign a contract, we mean the definitions based on how a WASP does business. So although there's a miyot, although there are plenty of other minorities, since they recognize they're a minority, they're not from the main group, the main block. So in that case, we say all minhagim automatically follow the block. However, if you're dealing with a melting pot, and everyone is from different countries, and you have 10% from this place, 10% from that place, just because you calculate and it turns out that 6 out of 10 people do something one way, that doesn't create a minhag. Because 6 out of 10 do it one way, 4 out of 10 do it the other way. It's only when it's not just a coincidence that 60% do it. where this whole society, the majority, come from one place and they set the social norms, that will be a minhag, even though it's only a roiv, even though it's, and even though normally we do not follow the majority. And that's how the Mabusha Yantiv looks at it. The Chavez Das in Simon Kovav or Kov Gimel, depending on the defus, has a fascinating tshuva about minhagim. And his case was, you had a person took a job as a cleaning help. And after a couple of months, this lady quit. She said, "I can't handle my boss. She works me to the bone. She locks the pantry so that I can't eat anything if I get hungry. And she's mocking at everything it does. Something breaks in the house, she takes it off my pay. I can't handle it. I want to quit." And the issue over there was, who was Peshe? Is the employer, was this woman allowed to work her help like this or not? So Zagdach Chavez Yar, he deals with it step by step. As far as the fact that she was working her too hard, he said, there we will have to look at the roiv. If the workload was consistent with the norm, if most people give such workloads, then that is kaveya minhag, and you have the right to force, and she would have the right to force her to work these hours or to do this kind of labor. So the Chavez Yar doesn't explain why there's no issue of roiv, but he says in such a case, to define what a job is, we go bust the roiv. If it's not, as far as locking the pantry, he says, l'chayra roiv people do not lock the pantry. They don't care if their help helps themselves to a snack every once in a while. So that you can force the lady not to do it. However, Zuck the Chavez Yar, if this lady was infamous for being cheap and for being strict, and the employee was local, he said, then you have no taina. Because even if the minhag is to leave the pantry open, to let the people take a snack, since this lady is known to be very stingy, and you took a job by her knowing that, that overrides the minhag. So Chavez Yar is making an important point that a local minhag, if there's one company that everyone knows, they work their employees to the bone, even if they're forcing you to do more than the minhag, that's not a problem. Because once it becomes known that they work harder, or work you harder, they have a local minhag. Minhag doesn't have to be the whole city. You can have a personal minhag. Now, usually it doesn't happen. Usually what you do in your little corner doesn't create a minhag. But if it's well known, if it's a larger business, then you will create your personal minhag that people will have to follow when they come work for you. What? It could be the first person he hired, he told them, "I'm hiring you, I'm working you, you know, sunrise to sunset." As long as you speak it out, that's fine. Once you speak it out to the first bunch of people and that becomes the norm, then everyone would be bound to it regardless of whether or not you speak it out with them. It's like a tanai. All minhag is like a tanai. It's an implied tanai. And the point of the Chavez Yar is we don't necessarily have to look at the whole city. We can look at at one business. And if there's a clear minhag or way this they do business and you deal with them and you're local, it means you should have known, that minhag will govern. But then the Chavez Yar continues, what about the last point? The fact that every time this lady broke something, you made them pay. Here he says, roiv isn't enough. Because al pi din, if you have a worker and he's mazik something, he's a shomer sachar, he has to pay you. So Zog the Chavez Yar, if no one charges, then if you want to go ahead and you want to start charging, he says it's bat ladaite. You don't have the right to start charging for these damages if across the board everyone is moichel, everyone says it's okay. But ladaite, you don't have the right to do it. But if it's just a question of most people are generous and they go easy on their employees, some are, some aren't, in such a case where it's a question of overriding a specific halacha, overriding a clear chiyuv mazik, there a roiv is not enough. And there, unless it's a supermajority, unless it's basically unheard of to send them a bill, then you would not be bound to the minhag, and you have every right to insist that the halacha be followed and to collect the din.
What about the opposite case where this company
is much nicer than everybody else? So if it's something which is clear, it was well known and established, then there is a personal minhag. And a personal minhag is binding. They can't just switch retroactively. Going forward, usually they have the right to fire the workers, and to the extent they have the right to fire the workers, they can renegotiate the terms. But if, you know, if it's after the fact, they say, listen, although we've always acted in a certain way and everyone knew we acted in a certain way, we've now retroactively changed our minds, that they can't do. Your employer can't now send you a bill going back 20 years, all the extra sick days that you took. In the future, if they have the right to fire you, which that's the next topic we're going to get to, but if they have the right to fire you, then they have the right to renegotiate. If you're in the middle of a term, they hire a rebbe or a teacher, and in the middle of the year, they can't just fire him, then they cannot change the terms until the end of the year. I wouldn't be so quick to make the diuk. I think he's probably making just a factual observation that he says, if it is known in the city that this lady is very strict, then you cannot then argue you didn't accept it. He doesn't discuss whether it should be known. He doesn't discuss how it got known. He just discusses a factual point that people know about it. You're local. You can't claim ignorance afterwards. Now, just to end off with one last important halacha, that is the Mordechai point says that the concept of minhag is limited to a minhag vasikin. Whenever you want to override halacha, it has to be either a basis in the Torah or you need a takana. Now, this Mordechai would obviously, if you follow this Mordechai, then it would really do away with most minhagim. Because most minhagim today, we do not have a caucus where everyone comes and votes on minhagim. They just evolve. So in halacha, there's a bit of a tumult. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, you look at the Ramah, and the Gris Moshe points out, there's no mention of this Mordechai. It's not brought down in Shulchan Aruch or any of the Noisa Kalim. And based on that, the Gris Moshe says there's no such need. In minhag, if this is how people do things, we follow the minhag. However, there are many earlier Achroinim and Rishonim that do follow this Mordechai. And in the very least, in a case where a minhag goes against the halacha, they say we do not apply a minhag unless it is a minhag vasikin, unless there was some form of takana. Now in halacha it's not completely clear. Clearly if you're a mugzik and a minhag is backing you up, you will win even if it's keneged halacha, because a minhag plus a mugzik together you'll be able to say kimli. If you're using a minhag to be moitzi where it's keneged halacha, there it's not completely clear. Rav Moshe holds that we will be moitzi, that we follow the minhag since it's not brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Others argue. I mean, Lemaisa, if you're dealing with a contractual issue with the question of defining intent, I think everyone would follow the minhag. If it's a question of a knas or something which should require a kinyan or something which is directly against halacha, then it's a little bit more questionable. All right, next week we're going to Mirat Hashem start a new topic. We're going to be discussing Schiras Poilim, but we're going to deal with the more practical matters of when can you fire a worker, when is a worker allowed to resign, and under what conditions, and causing damages. And that's really a completely separate area in Schiras Poilim. Thank you.